Hello, I'm John Burns, and I'm bringing you another extract from my book, The Last Hill Walker. This extract relates to an expedition, I think you'd have to call it, that Martin, Joe and I made, I think it's in the, around about 1978, so a long time ago now. And it was, you won't believe this, but it was actually in a drought, in one of the longest, hottest summers I think Britain has ever experienced. If you can believe such a thing. So this, at this point, here we are approaching a ridge that we've been attempting to conquer quite a long time. Not too far now, Martin announces as the three of us huddle around his old cloth map. Once we crest the ridge and descend into the valley beyond, there will only be the South Clunie Ridge to climb up and over before we can walk out of the road and reach civilization at Shield Bridge. Already I'm dreaming of the cafe there, the delights of the small shop, and most of all, the little pub Martin promises awaits us there. In our effort to save weight, we have rigorously calculated our food rations. On this, the last leg of our 3-day walk, the only food that remains between us is 3 chocolate biscuits. These we have agreed to consume before the last climb out to the road. Joe's afro of red hair is overheating in the sun. Great! I'll be glad to lose this bloody pack. Ready for the last push over the ridge, I shoulder my pack. Its external aluminium frame takes the opportunity to dig in my flesh as I settle it onto my shoulders. Half an hour later, I'm grateful to feel a cool breeze against my cheek, but even happier because I know that it heralds the summit of the ridge. Images of beer and smiling, friendly young women form in my mind. Then it happens. I find myself staring in disbelief. Below us should lie a wide glen with a small river and a short walk to the south side of the ridge between us and Glenshiel. But what we see is a huge expanse of water. Water that has no right to be there. I look away and turn back in the hope that it's an optical illusion, but the lake refuses to move. We've gone the wrong bloody way, I call to Martin and Joe as they catch up with me on the ridge. We can't be lost, Martin says, unfolding the map. There's a fucking lake. I run up and down, perhaps hoping that the illusion will be dispelled if I can get a better angle on it. Martin dumps his pack and stares in disbelief at the expanse of water. There is no lake, he insists, and solemnly hands me the map, as though one glance at it will evaporate the thousands of gallons of water barring our way. Perhaps I should explain. The three of us have developed a couple of navigational mantras forged in the mists of Cumbria. The first is, the compass is always right. We learnt this the hard way after following our instincts a few occasions, when the flickering red needle seemed to be sending us in an absurd direction. When our faith wavered, magnetic north pushed us like a vengeful god, revealing, when the mist cleared, that we were miles from our intended destination. We are all now high priests of the Order of the Compass, and whenever one of us dares to doubt the accuracy of the needle, we will chant our compass mantra and follow its lead in silent devotion. Our second mantra is the one we're resorting to now. If it's not on the map, it doesn't exist. Anything that isn't marked on the map has no navigational purpose and therefore can be ignored. Thus we treat new houses, forestry plantations, tracks and fences that were not written on in our topographical Bible as figments of other people's imagination. I crouch on all fours, the map spread out before me, consulting the oracle of the compass. No matter how much I twist the map, the landscape in front of me doesn't fit. The landscape behind me oddly fits fine. Slowly, an explanation for our plight begins to take shape. They've built a bloody reservoir, haven't they? Oh, shit! Joe hurls himself and his pack down in the heather in despair. They made a bloody good job of it too. This isn't a small lake we can walk around in an hour or two. This is an inland ocean that stretches for miles across our path. There will be no beer and smiling girls tonight. When was this map printed? Joe demands, ever practical. Martin is an avid collector of old maps. He spends days in the back of dusty old shops, seeking out ancient relics of the cartographer's art. Many of the maps we've used are printed on cloth, their contours drawn by the hands of long-dead map makers. We've used them happily until now, based on the assumption that mountains don't change.
1954, Martin confesses.
Neither of us says anything, but we all know that the days of old maps are over. There is no path around the lochside, so we stagger along the boulder-strewn shore, moving constantly in a clockwise direction, our left legs always higher than our right. Martin stumbles on the rocks and opens a savage cut across his knee. We stop to patch him up with a plaster from one of his numerous plastic bags. Every one of Martin's belongings has his own plastic bag to keep it dry. Packing can take him an eternity. Should a bag get lost, he has to open every other one to find it. And Joe and I each have our possessions in one large plastic bag, but that's far too simple for Martin. For this trip, I saved up and now proudly boast an orange Carrymore pack. It has a tubular aluminium frame with shoulder straps attached to it, and the sack itself is strapped to the frame. The pack creaks and groans as the weight shifts on every step, but it's a massive improvement from the wartime relic I'd used in the lakes, or the fragile Sky pack that sacrificed its life on the Pennine Way. I even have a cagoule. Well, at least something that looks like a cagoule. Nylon and as cheap and as cheerful as they come, but it's the best I can afford. The cagoule is fine, as long as it doesn't rain, because I doubt it will withstand more than the briefest of showers. At last, we find ourselves where we should have been 5 hours ago, where the old path emerges from the loch as though from a submerged village. Exhausted by the heat and our interminable diversion around the water, we gratefully erect our tent. It's made from blue, heavy canvas and possesses that ultimate luxury, a sewn-in ground sheet. This tent was never designed for backpacking. You're supposed to drive it around in a car and put it up with folding chairs and a little plastic table somewhere nice near the sea. We are lugging it over the mountains, but despite its weight, once it's up, it's strong and comfortable. The downside of our enforced camp is that we didn't plan our food to cover it. All we have is 3 biscuits I'm carrying. Once our sleeping bags are out, we settle down for our feast. I fumble in my rucksack and pull out 2 of the biscuits. Then spend a minute or two searching the pockets for a third, but come up empty-handed. I can't find the other one, I explain. This gets Martin and Joe's full attention. When all you have is a handful of biscuits, their location assumes immense importance. I tip out my rucksack. Spare socks, toothbrush, and an assortment of clothes land on the grass, but no third biscuit. It's got to be somewhere, Joe says. Frenzied searching ensues. Sleeping bags are shaken out, each rucksack ransacked, but the whereabouts of the biscuit remains a mystery. Joe is now suspicious. You sure you don't know where that biscuit went? I'm stung by the inference that I might have secretly scoffed it. No, of course not. Well, there were 3. Martin, the mathematician of our group, interjects. I know that. It must have got lost. As I say these words, I realise they sound like the pleading of a guilty man. Martin and Joe look at me with silent accusations in their eyes. Suspicion clouds the air. That night, we each dine on 2/3 of a biscuit. We are 3 men, miles from anywhere, in some of the most magnificent scenery in the world. And the one thought that obsesses all of us is the fate of a Jacob's Chocolate Club biscuit. Well, I hope you enjoyed that little excerpt from my book. Books sort of follows my mountaineering life from my early start in the Lake District and the Pennine Way up to my explorations in Scotland, ice climbing and many other shenanigans, I think you'd have to call them. Anyway, you can obtain my book from Amazon, either as an e-book or as the good old-fashioned paper version. Do hope you enjoyed that excerpt and come back soon.